at the goal line, touchdown. It's Kolaris throwing in the back of the end zone, and touchdown. Sickfield with the score, 22-yard connection. Franklin hit as he got rid of it, overthrows him. But Daly's got his second pick of the game. Now fumbles the football on that handoff and away goes Eric Norwood. He scored last week. Going to score again. Nobody's going to catch the big man, Eric Norwood. And it's another defensive touchdown for the Hamilton Ticats. Their eighth of the year.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
So, Mike, we got into a little bit of a back and forth with a rival podcast this week. As we'll get into in a bit, the Ticats went to Edmonton to play the Eskimos, and our friend Andrew over at the Eskimo Empire podcast dropped us a little bet. He said that if the Ticats were to beat the Eskimos, that he would play the Arkells Ticats Are Hummin' at the top of his show. And if the Eskimos were to beat the Ticats, we were to play the Eskimo fight song at the top of ours. And anyone listening to the show will notice that that song did not play at the beginning of our show. So we all know who won that bet. Let's pat ourselves on the back a little bit.
Good to hear that song on an Eskimos podcast.
It's a catchy tune. We've been hearing it a lot, especially in Hamilton. They played after every touchdown, and they score a lot of touchdowns. So it's a definite earworm nowadays. But before we move on to talking about the Ticats trouncing of the Eskimos last Friday, you were in attendance at Commonwealth Stadium. So why don't you tell everyone what that was like?
It was great. You know, I've never been to Commonwealth Stadium. I've been to Montreal, Ottawa, obviously Hamilton, Sky Dome, and Calgary for a couple Grey Cups, but never Edmonton. So Edmonton is off the list now, and all there's left is Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, BC's. You know, it was a real nice stadium. I always thought that it looked nice, especially after they replaced the new seats, put the new seats in. So it was just cool to be at a stadium with such great history with that dynasty back in the day. So it was just an overall great experience. Except I was walking in and I had with three Eskimo fans, and I got picked out to get the metal wand because I believe I was wearing all Ticats gear. So I believe I was discriminated against at Commonwealth Stadium.
They thought you were going to cause a little bit of a ruckus, I guess? I guess you are a bit of a troublemaker.
I am a bit. But no, I'm sure it was just completely random. But yeah, we had great seats. We were on the second deck, about three rows from the railing on the east side, and just a great view of the field. You know, I like to be up high and see the play develop, see the whole field. As soon as I got there, I was pumped about the seats, so it was just a great time.
So do you plan on going back to any non-Ticats games at Commonwealth this season?
I do plan on going back to many. Probably next one coming up on this Friday against the Argos, and I'll be maybe even wearing some Eskimos gear because, you know, Argos suck and all.
Well, yeah, I can understand cheering against the Argos. Let's move on now to the actual game itself. Last week, I started off simply by saying, wow, and essentially I'm starting off this week saying the same thing. I did not see that beating coming.
Well, I did predict that they put up 50, so I guess I kind of did, but, you know, I was kind of tongue-in-cheek with that prediction because I really, really didn't think they put up 50. I was going super bold with that. So, yeah, I thought it would be a closer game, and I think the turnovers just killed the Eskimos. I mean, if you look at some of the stats, Eskimos had more net offense. They had more total first downs, more passing yards, more rushing yards, more time of possession. So it was just, you know, I might be getting ahead of myself here, but it was just Hamilton jumping on those turnovers and getting touchdowns out of them.
8 turnovers, which produced 35 of Hamilton's 49 points. Like you said, was the turnovers that made a difference right off the hop. Edmonton's first series, Mike Daly with the interception, who just, he had a phenomenal game out there. 7 tackles, a sack, a forced fumble, 2 interceptions. Filling in for Craig Butler, he is looking like a guy who can start in the secondary, regardless if Butler's healthy or not. And of course, defensively, right at the end of the game, essentially the game sealer. The Eskimos were driving, about to make it a 2-score game, and we get the Shakir Bell fumble. Eric Norwood scoops it up and gets his second return touchdown in as many weeks. This one was a Ticats record for longest fumble return. And just that was it. That took the heart out of the Eskimos. And, you know, I got to give credit for the Eskimos for never really giving up. They got behind super early and super big, but they kept trying to plug away. And sitting watching the game, I was a little nervous because they kept scoring. But what the Ticats were able to do was any time Edmonton scored, they came right back and scored themselves. It really showed me that this team is probably the most complete it has ever been in the time that I've been watching them play.
Yeah, with that fumble at the 1 yard line, I mean, you just hear the whole crowd just sigh, like, oh, God. It was a high snap, and they never really got the ball to Shakir Bell. You know, Norwood, 107 yards it was, all the way back. I mean, he's pretty quick for a defensive lineman, and that was, nail in the coffin for the Eskimos, I think. They would have scored there. Yeah, you know, it still would have been possible for them to come back.
Entirely possible. 9 minutes were still left on the clock, and in a league where possessions can turn around in 40 seconds or so, Edmonton absolutely would have still been in that game with 9 minutes to go and down two scores. So to really put that dagger in them, you know, it sealed the win, and it was nice to see. There were some hiccups during the game, but again, it felt like they put together a really complete game. I guess we should probably talk about the very average Zach Collaros. Once again, just shredding this vaunted Eskimos defense. The completion percentage wasn't great. He was 18 for 30, but 325 yards and three touchdown passes. Just a magnificent outing.
Yeah, and no interceptions. So if you don't, you know, that's huge if you don't turn over the ball. So you're right, the percentages weren't great, but the touchdown passes, I mean, just night and day from last year to this year, they're putting the ball in the end zone. And that's, I mean, they didn't even have a field goal this game. It was just seven touchdowns for 49 points. So obviously not all on offense. I mean, and we got to talk about Sinkfield too. You know, he had an amazing game, six catches for 118 yards and two touchdowns. And two great catches in the end zone, too. What do you think of him?
Oh, I was super impressed. Filling in for Bakari Grant, essentially. And, you know, he was out of the lineup for a couple of weeks, a few weeks ago. And he's saying right now that he does not want to be taken out of the lineup just by becoming a very solid receiver. Watching some of his play, he does tend to drop passes every now and then. And it seems like the focus might not be there. But maybe sitting on the bench for a couple of weeks and not dressing has really given him a chance to sort of look at the field, see everything that's going on, and realize the opportunity he has here. And he's taken advantage of it. Because, yeah, that was, especially early on in that game, he was Collaros' go-to guy. And then in the second half, it was essentially all Luke Tasker, who also had a great game, you know, five catches for 129 yards and one beautiful, beautiful catch down the middle that led to, I believe, the very next play or maybe two plays later led to another Hamilton touchdown. Just astounding how guys, Andy Fantuz is out, Bakari Grant is out, and guys are still stepping up. And it just shows you the depth that this team has in 2015, and one guy goes down, it's next man up, and they seem to be filling in rather well, and Sinkfield is one of those guys.
Like you said, Tasker, with just, you know, this guy seems to catch almost everything that's thrown his way. So, you know, that catch kind of reminded me of Ben Cahoon. He's not overly fast, but he gets open and he just catches everything.
And he makes guys miss. There was a nice catch he had down the sideline where he caught it, stopped.
He ducked under.
Exactly. And then picked up another, you know, 10, 15, 20 yards. It's guys just out there making plays. A unit that's, you know, not necessarily making plays, but one that we have to heap a ton of praise on right now is the offensive line. Edmonton came in leading the league in sacks with 27. They did leave this week leading the league in sacks, but it was still with 27. The offensive line kept Collaros clean all game, and on a lot of those deep passes, the one to Tasker, he had that deep, you know, 60-some-odd-yard pass to Sinkfield that set up, I believe it was the Brandon Banks touchdown. Mm-hmm. It was having tons of time back there for most of the night, and to do that against a defensive line as good as Edmonton's is really impressive. This offensive line, which, you know, was a bit of a weak spot for the Ticats during their runs to the Grey Cup the last 2 years, really looks like it's turned into a solid, solid unit.
Yeah, you gotta love to see that. And when Edmonton's D-line did get some pressure on Collaros, he's ducking out of there. He was avoiding tackles. He was making plays out of the pocket. That's just great to see too. But obviously, like you said, the O-line just a great job this week.
The team itself, like, just in general, is clicking. They're 6-2. I'm not sure how old you were in 1998, but I was 16, and that's the last time that this team was 6-2. It's just a great time to be a Ticats fan.
Everything just seems to be going their way right now. They're all together a good team, so hopefully they can keep that going against Montreal next week, and then Toronto in the Labor Day game.
You know, I cannot remember a time where I felt this confident about the Ticats, where I legitimately can sit here and say, without any hesitation, they are currently the best team in the CFL. No one is close to these guys.
Not right now. Calgary might be coming into their own. You could say Edmonton is among them, but the offense just isn't there right now. Maybe James Franklin can do something, but apparently he got injured with a lung contusion or something by the Ticats.
Yeah, but he's going to start this week, so I'm assuming the Franklin injury occurred when he was leveled by Rico Murray on the interception, because that one looked like just an open shot to the ribs. But yeah, apparently he's been named the starter this week for Edmonton against Toronto, so with you going to Commonwealth to watch the Esks play the Argos, you're going to get to see James Franklin start his first professional game.
And I thought that he looked good when he came in the second half, so yeah, maybe he can raise the Eskimos' play to elite level, because, you know, their offense is great. I mean, their defense is great, but their offense really needs to step up. So maybe he can be that guy that guides them to the elite level of the CFL.
Well, he seems to be, whenever he comes into the game, a spark plug. I don't have his numbers present, but he threw for almost 250 yards, I think, in that second half. Had a couple of nice touchdown passes. He did throw the interception, just talked about, Daly's second pick of the game. But again, he got leveled. I said last week, I believe you asked me, who should start for the Eskimos going forward? And I said James Franklin, because I think he just gives a different dimension to the Eskimos that Matt Nichols just does not have. And it'll be nice to see what he can do with a full week of starters reps. And hopefully my confidence in him will show through this week and the Eskimos can do us a favor and knock off the surprisingly 6-2 Toronto Argonauts.
Who would have thought the Argos would have been 6-2? I mean, that's just crazy, but we shall see if they're for real or not in the upcoming weeks, I think, because they got to play the Eskimos and then they got to play us. So those will be two big games for the Argos.
Well, they play us back to back, so that's three huge games for the Argos. They could very easily be 6-5, and the Ticats could be running away with the East Division by that point. But, you know, nothing's ever for certain, and teams can put up a stinker, teams can come and play, but the Argos are in for a bit of a tough go the next few weeks. But this is not an Argos podcast, it's not an Eskimos podcast. Let's get back to the Ticats. Bold predictions, like you just said. You said that the Ticats would put up 50, and if we rewind the tape, I'm pretty sure that I was probably just stunned silent because I thought there was no way that would ever come close to happening. I believe I told you if you would have said 40, I would have given you cojones for picking that many, and lo and behold, the final score was 49-20, and oh man, what were you thinking on that Norwood touchdown? Were you thinking go for two?
Pretty much. I was thinking, we talked about it before the show, I think there was 9 minutes left when that happened, so that's a lot of time to score of Rouge. So, yeah, I was thinking go for two, and I was thinking, you know, they're going to get 50-plus because there's so much time left, and even if they put in Jeff Matthews, he can move the ball, and they can get a field goal. But, you know, I was kind of peeved that it ended up 49 because I was so the closest you can get to 50, but it is what it is. It's all right. I was pretty close.
Hey, it's better to get the bold prediction wrong and have the team win, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I
thought that we should mention Grigsby, too. You know, when he got in there, his first touch, he ran for a good, I don't know, 20, 30 yards on that.
I think it was a 40 yards carry. I think it was a 40 yard carry on the unbalanced lines. Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to go with Holly going forward, but you know, Grigsby looked pretty good every time he touched the ball.
And he was, you know, he was out there on special teams too. I noted on Twitter, I'd rewatched a bit of the game, saw some highlights, and, you know, was trying to prep for the show, really. And yeah, I was out there on punt coverage duty, and a lot of the talk when he came here last year was how he was a cancer in the Winnipeg locker room, and how he was a bad teammate, according to inside sources in Winnipeg. And, you know, you don't hear that from the guys here in Hamilton. No one's ever really said anything bad about him. And then you see him out there, you know, he just returns to the lineup, he's getting a second chance to be here, and he's pretty much going out there and doing whatever the team asks of him, and whatever the team needs, he's trying to just get out there and get those wins, and to me, he needs to be commended for that.
You know, I was slightly worried when he came over from Winnipeg about stuff that you heard about him, but he's been great ever since he's been with the Ticats, and I'm glad he's back with them. One negative from the game is too many penalties for the Ticats. You know, yeah, I think they had 17, so they need to cut back on those.
Yeah, it was almost 200 yards in penalties, and a lot of them, you know, a couple of them, like, there was a penalty at, like, a few of them. Eric Harris took a penalty roughing the passer call when he jumped up, and I'm not sure if Franklin or Nichols was in the game, and he hit his helmet, and that's a penalty, but it's not one of those ones where, you know, it wasn't malicious, and Brian Hall was the same thing. He took a penalty that, you know, Harris then picked up a fumble and returned it for a touchdown, but it was called back because, again, roughing the passer. It's just, you know, sometimes major penalties happen like that, and you can't really even fault the player necessarily, but you're right. They need to get those penalties under control. They've done a good job the last few weeks. We hadn't really seen penalties really have an effect, but yeah, last Friday it was way too many penalties. Wow, just way too many.
Hopefully they'll clean that up. You know, sometimes they just have an off game, I guess, and they'll clean it up the next couple games going forward, so I don't think it's anything to worry about, really.
Yeah, probably not. Like, well, it hasn't really hurt them now. Like I said earlier, they're 6-2, so yeah. You know, even the things they're doing wrong, It hasn't really cost them any games, but a team coached by Ken Austin is not going to rest on its laurels, and they're in there, you know, making sure that they're trying to do whatever they can to get better. They don't see this as anything other than a team that can get better, which is a scary thing for the other eight teams across the league. But anyway, we're talking about bowl predictions, and I'm on a bit of a hot streak. I said the Ticats would score multiple offensive touchdowns, and by about, what, 8 minutes into the first quarter, they put two on the board. And
normally that doesn't sound very bold, but with the Eskimos streak of how many games not allowing a touchdown at Commonwealth Stadium, it was pretty bold.
Yeah, and the thing was, when I said multiple TTs, I meant like two. They scored six on offense.
Yeah.
And no, I never would have thought in a million years they're scoring that many, but every week this team does something that not surprises me, but just makes me think, like, this is the best team in the CFL. And putting up six offensive touchdowns at 49 points at Edmonton is just astounding. All right, so let's move on to a little CFL talk. The big news of the week was the Alouettes fired Tom Higgins, replaced him with Jim Popp, and did so the day after they go into BC and win for the first time in BC in 15 years. What's going on?
I don't know. I saw that. I forget if I was on the CFL app or just roaming through Twitter, but I saw that and I was like, what? They're 3-5, and I guess they haven't been playing great, but Jim Popp, again, on the sidelines, like, it's kind of getting old. I mean, Higgins had a rough go of it at the start of last season, but then they turned it around. You know, despite having Crompton as their QB, they turned it around, and then, you know, they're not out of it by any means right now. It was just a shocker, and I don't understand it at all. You know, Pop hasn't had the greatest record on the sidelines, so I don't get it.
Well, the team, you could say, is underperforming after coming off an East final appearance last year, but they thought Crompton was going to be their guy going forward, and he got hurt before the end of the first half in the first game. And, you know, I'm no Jonathan Crompton fan, but if you think someone's going to be your starting quarterback and then they get hurt and then their backup gets hurt and then you're going to a guy in the second game who's a raw rookie right out of college who wasn't even on the roster the first week of the season, I don't really see how you can put a lot of the blame on Higgins for the team's poor performance. And even at 3-5 right now, they are 1 point out of a playoff spot because they could cross over into the West.
If Pop goes in there and doesn't turn it around per se, no, they weren't that bad off to begin with. Like you said, they just beat BC in BC. You got to think that there's going to be some heat on Jim Popp. I'm not sure whose decision this was. I guess it had to be Wetnall's. But yeah, there's a lot of pressure on Jim Popp to really improve this team, because I thought Tom Higgins did a pretty good job so far this season, even though with their record, just like the circumstances you said, raw rookie at quarterback, they're only 2 points out of a playoff spot. So there's a lot of pressure on Jim Popp.
And I think they've lost in all their losses. I think it's something like it's under 20 total points. It might even be under 15 total points on how many of what they've lost by. So again, the team is competing and they are 3-5. They are a single point out of a crossover spot. They're a game back of Ottawa right now. Ottawa did beat them twice. So I guess technically they're 2 games back of Ottawa right now for third in the East. They're not out of it. It's not like they're 0-8. Mm. You know, there's a team out there that's 0-8 right now, and they are just, you know, plugging along and just, they're not making any changes. Now they're getting raked over the coals a little bit by a lot of people for not making any changes, but I just don't understand the reason that a team would fire their coach 8 games into the season when they're still in the thick of things. It doesn't really make any sense.
I remember when Higgins was hired and there was all that controversy about, you know, Jim Popp didn't hire him and all that stuff, and he was Wetnall's guy, so I don't really understand this either. It's a real noodle scratcher.
Well, let's get into that Al's Lions game, shall we? As we have done the last couple of weeks and we'll continue to do, we find questions for one another concerning the teams in the game or just in general. So following this game, my question to you is, the Owls are at 3-5, the Lions are at 3-5, the Blue Bombers are at 3-5, the Rough Riders are at 0-8. Do you think we could see the fourth place team in the East Division cross over into the West this year?
I think it's possible. I don't think it's ever happened.
It has not.
It has not. So this is the year, if any year. I mean, you got the Lions, and they're okay. You know, you never know what you're going to get out of Lule, and you never know how the run defense for BC has been brutal, especially last game. They got run over so bad.
Yeah, something almost 250 yards or something like that. Yeah, they got hammered in the run game.
And then you got Winnipeg, who seems to be lost without Willie, even though Marv had, you know, pretty good game, his first game. You know, that's a big question mark with Marv, the backup quarterback in there. You don't know how good Winnipeg's going to be. either. So, you know, those two teams could drop off. And then look at Montreal, they can get Cato going. They could be a pretty good team with their defense, and they got a lot of offensive weapons. And Ottawa played a pretty good game against Toronto. You know, Burris was on fire. He almost, I think he was over 400 yards passing. So you never know with Ottawa. So I think it can happen. I think there's a over 50% chance that it will happen, but you just never know. So I'm going to say over 50% that it'll happen.
I am going to even go higher than that. I think an East team will cross over this year. I think the only undoing of either Ottawa or Montreal to get to the West for the playoffs is that they have to play Toronto and Hamilton. Montreal still has two games left against the Ticats, one coming up this Thursday. They still have, I believe, two left against the Argonauts, though I could be mistaken. It might be only one, but I don't think those two teams have played yet, so I'm pretty sure it's still two games left. That could be what hurts the Alouettes the most, because they've already played Calgary twice, and they've already played Edmonton once, so they only have one more game left against the Eskimos. I think the Owls, they might get to 7 or 8 wins and finish fourth and be good enough to cross over. I'm just not sold on BC, and as much as I think in our season preview, I had Winnipeg up there. Again, I didn't envision Drew Willey getting hurt, and they are just a different team without him in there. So they could be due in for a bit of a slide, and I just don't see the Riders turning it around enough to win, you know, 7 or 8 games. I think the Alouettes or the Red Blacks, whichever team finishes fourth, will be playing in the West Division playoffs. I think they'll get crushed, however, by, you know, either Calgary or Edmonton, but I think they're going to get there. And, you know, this is the year the East has really turned things around. So it'll be nice to see one of our division mates head over West and finally shut up a lot of those Westerners who are like, the East is crap and the West is best. Not in 2015, it's not.
It'll definitely be different to see. I mean, like you said, it's never happened, and it's been Western domination for years and years and years, and I don't understand why that is, but it's just the way it's been. So, you know, there's a good chance of it happening, and I'd like to see it happen. So my question to you is, does Montreal have the best running back combo in the league with Sutton and Rutley?
It's either those two or it's those two guys in Saskatchewan. Although Anthony Allen didn't play this week, I don't think. But I really like, you know, the Messam Allen combo in Saskatchewan. Both those guys are playing. They're both pretty good. But if Allen's not playing, then yeah, I do think that Montreal has the best 1-2 combo. And I think that's sort of how the Owls should, you know, they're not going to do it this week against Hamilton, because Hamilton's run defense, you know, has stopped the best of the best every week. But leaning on those two, especially the young quarterback, would be a good way to go. And so, yeah, right now I'd have to give those two the nod. I think they are the best running back combo in the CFL.
I like both of those guys. I'm a big Sutton fan. I think he's a really good running back. And Rutley, the, you know, former Ticat, I think has done a great job. You know, Sutton went down. I think he was injured for a game, and Bradley came in and had a really good game. And now it seems that they're using them as a 1-2 punch. And yeah, I have to say that they're the best as well right now, with Messam and Allen just behind them.
So moving on, you know, we're talking about Messam and Allen. They play for the Riders, and another heartbreaking loss in Saskatchewan. 34-31, the Stamps beat the Riders at Mosaic, dropping the Riders to 0-8. And that is where we start with my question to you. When will the Saskatchewan Rough Riders get their first win of the season?
Let's see here. I'm looking at the schedule right here. So they play the Red Blacks next week. I don't know if that's going to be a win. They play Winnipeg. I'm going to say they get a 1 win against the Blue Bombers. They play them back-to-back weeks, the Red Blacks this week, and then Blue Bombers twice in a row. So I'm going to say in one of those games, they're going to get a win, because they're 0-8, and it's not good in Saskatchewan right now. But I don't think that they're the worst team ever in the CFL by any means. I think they're an okay team. So I don't think they're going to go 0-8. So I say they're going to get a win against Winnipeg in one of those two games.
That is sort of where I'm leaning to. If you look at their next, I believe it's 6 opponents. It's Ottawa, Winnipeg, Winnipeg, Ottawa, Montreal, BC. There's got to be a win in there somewhere, right? In those 6 chances, they got to be able to find somewhere to win. And I, too, think it will be against Winnipeg. And I think it's going to be Labor Day weekend. They play on that Sunday. The Bombers already went into Saskatchewan and won once this year. So the Riders are going to be frothing at the mouth. Those fans are going to be just their loudest. It reminds me of all those years when the Ticats were really bad and the Argos would come into town and the fans would get amped for the game and the players would get amped for the game. The 1991 Labor Day Classic is one I went to and one that stands out. The Ticats, I believe, were 0-8 going into that game, and the Argos were 6-2 maybe even 7-1. It was... They were a juggernaut. They would go on to win the Grey Cup that year. That was when Dunnigan was there and Rocket Ishmael, and they just had everyone. They were clicking on all cylinders.
Was that the Winfield game?
No, the Winfield game was in 88. One, the Argos come in to Hamilton. I remember there wasn't a lot of people in the stands, but man, did they, you know, they made noise for that game, and early the Cats got on them, and I think the final was something to the tune of like 48-24. They just hammered them, and the Cats would go on to win like three or four games that year. It was a brutal season, but they brought it on Labor Day. With that in mind, I am going to say that Rough Rider fans, the few of you out there that listen, you guys are getting your first W Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, I could see that as well, you know, just for the reason that you just said. They always get up for the Labor Day game no matter what, so I could see that too. Okay, my question to you is for the Riders game is, do you see Brett Smith being a starting quarterback in this league down the road?
I do. I think he has looked tremendous for a rookie quarterback this year. And if I'm the Rough Riders, even if Kevin Glenn gets healthy, you know, their season essentially is over. I'm starting him the rest of the way to see what they have going forward. I have been really impressed with Brett Smith, so I would not be surprised if at some time in the near future, the next year or two, he is starting at quarterback for a team in the CFL.
Yeah, I've also been impressed. I think that, you know, you're seeing the young quarterbacks play well in this league right now. That's always a good thing to see. I'm not sure with Darian Durant, you know, that's their guy in Saskatchewan, so I'm not sure if it'll be with the Rough Riders, but you never know with, you know, some of the quarterbacks like Ray and Burris getting up there in age. Maybe Brett Smith gets a chance with one of those two teams. Probably not the Argos because they got Trevor Harris, but maybe with the Red Blacks, I'm not sure, but I think he's good enough to be a starting quarterback eventually.
Well, here's the thing with Durant. He's 33. You know, back-to-back seasons with season-ending injuries. He plays a style of game that I don't think is necessarily suited to having a super long career, such as at Calvillo or, you know, Henry Burris or Damon Allen. I think you could see him out of the league by the time he's, you know, 36, 37. Maybe he takes that Kevin Glenn role where, you know, he gets into his mid-30s and he becomes a really, really good backup. So I would not be surprised if, you know, Smith in 2 years is the starter in Saskatchewan, but he will be the starter somewhere. I'm convinced of it. I've really liked what I've seen out of him. It's one of the few bright spots that Rider fans can look to in what has essentially been a lost season for them.
Like, the thing with Durant is he's at his best when he's running the ball. He's got that, you know, running the ball and throwing the ball. So I'm not sure if he can be strictly a pocket quarterback. So I think you might be right about that.
Let's move on to the Argos victory over the Red Black. Coming out of that game, though, my question to you is this. Jeremiah Johnson started at running back for the Red Blacks and scored two touchdowns. Didn't have a ton of yards rushing and receiving, but found the end zone. They were starting him in place of former Ticat Siobhan Walker. Walker pretty much was only in for kickoffs. So my question is this. Should the Red Blacks simply just cut Siobhan Walker?
That's a tough one. You know, I think we talked about it before. He can make those big plays. You know, he has really good speed. He's pretty good on the screen passes, and he's just not a great. I don't think he's an all-around running back. I think Jeremiah Johnson is more of that. I think he can go between the tackles better than Siobhan Walker. I'm not sure about his blocking ability, but he's probably better than Walker. So he's just really fallen off since his first year with the Ticats when he kind of caught fire and seemed like a future star. So maybe they should cut him and stick Johnson in there, but maybe they should just keep him as a backup. I'm not sure. It's tough to say.
It is tough to say because I never really like to advocate for players or coaches or anyone losing their jobs. I think that's a really crappy thing as fans to do because these guys, this is how they make their living. But he's just not been, he's been hit or miss. I was going to say he's not been impressive, but I'm going to say he's been hit or miss. And he's sort of been hit or miss ever since, like you said, that sort of first few games when he was with the Ticats. He's never really developed anything past the, I'm going to try to break a big one. And then when he does, it's fantastic. Oh my God, he has a 90-yard touchdown. But any other time it's, oh man, he's, you know, caught for a 2-yard loss. I really don't know what they should do with him, but I think if they don't cut him, I don't think he should be the starting tailback anymore. He's a change of pace guy. He's a guy you bring in, you know, on second and long and give him a wheel route out of the backfield. And hopefully, you know, if he catches and makes a guy miss, he can take it the distance, but he's not a guy you can rely on to pick up the second and two ball down the middle. So he's a backup, I think, from here on out.
Now, are the Argos among the elite teams in the CFL?
This is the most emphatic answer I will give probably any question you ever ask me. No. N-O, 50,000 exclamation points. Absolutely not. Yes, they're 6-2, and they should be happy to be 6-2, but I am not impressed. Let's look at their wins. They have two wins against Saskatchewan, one of which they needed overtime, double overtime at that, to beat them. Then in the rematch that they had in Toronto, they beat them by just 7 points. Like, this is... If the Argos are that good, they're supposed to be out there, you know, hammering. We're seeing Hamilton hammer teams. We've seen Calgary hammer teams. The Argos are not hammering teams. They beat BC. They were down 21 points to BC, and they needed a massive comeback to win that game. They needed a comeback to beat Winnipeg. I'm just not impressed. Are they a good team? Are they a playoff team? Yes, I will give them that. Are they an elite team in the stratosphere of Hamilton and Calgary? And to be perfectly honest with you, I think Hamilton is in a tier all to their own right now. But are they in that upper echelon? No. They are not. If the playoffs started today, and I'm well aware that they don't, and the Argos had to travel to Hamilton for a playoff game, they would get beat by 30 points. It would not be close. It would be over by halftime. We'd all be celebrating a third Grey Cup appearance. So no, the Argos are not an elite team. Not even close.
You know, they're not crushing teams, you're right, but they are winning games. And it doesn't matter how many points you beat them by. It just matters if you win. I agree that they're not Hamilton and Calgary, but I think you slide them in there in the third spot. I think that they're better than Edmonton right now.
We're going to find out this week if they're better than Edmonton.
Yes, I think that they're better on offense than Edmonton. I think, you know, they're not as good on defense, but I think that, you know, their offense and defense together is a better team than Edmonton's all-around team. So I think you got Hamilton, which I would agree is, you know, just playing lights out right now in a league of their own at this moment. They're number one by leaps and bounds, and then you got Calgary, and then you got Toronto, and then you got Edmonton. So I think that Toronto is not an elite team, but a very good team. And in the playoffs, anything can happen, and I think that they could beat the Ticats in a playoff game because you just never know. I think they got the talent to do it, and I think they got the, you know, cardiac kid thing going on where they start kind of slow, and then they play really well in the second half. So, yeah, like I said, I'd stick them in the third spot.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up the cardiac kid thing, because that was where I was going next. They have needed comeback victories to beat what are essentially the league's doormats. And yeah, you're right. They don't care how much you win by. They just matter that you win. However, if they get into a game against the Ticats and they go down 21 points or 17 points early, like they did at the beginning of August, they're not good enough to make that comeback because that team is just better than them. It was the same with Calgary. I believe they played Calgary earlier this year, and I think they went down to them, and they weren't good enough to make the comeback because Calgary is just better than them. If you want to be an elite team, you have to play a full 60 minutes or at least play some facsimile of it. Sure, the Ticats and the Stamps have not played every game great. They have not played every minute of every game great. But I go into Ticats games thinking, how can this team lose? Not, are they going to get the win? I watch the Argos play or go into those Argos games wondering, are they going to win? And to me, if I'm wondering if they're going to win, especially against teams like Saskatchewan and Winnipeg and BC and a good but not great Ottawa team, that tells me that they're not in the elite class of teams in the CFL, even though they share a record with the two best teams in the league right now.
Yeah, they gotta, you know, if they want to be among Hamilton and Calgary, they gotta start quicker. You're right. You're absolutely right. They cannot go down to Hamilton or Calgary by 21 points because they just won't recover. So for them to get to that next level, they have to start the game off with some points and like not look terrible in the first half and then bring it on in the second half. So I think they're a good team, not a great team yet.
We're going to get a very good indication of how good they are. I will change my opinion. And you know what? I will start off the show next week by admitting the Argos are a great team if they either A, put together a full game and beat Edmonton, or make some miraculous comeback. If they can do it against a team like the Eskimos, not a team like the Riders or the Lions, then I will admit that I was wrong and that this Argos team is actually one that could make noise in the playoffs. But until they do it against a good team, I'm just not convinced. Enough of the rest of the CFL. Let's get back into some Ticats talk. This Thursday, it's Angela Mosca night at Tim Hortons Field. I nearly said Iverwind Stadium there. At Tim Hortons Field. Old habits are hard to break, I guess. They're going to be retiring his number 68. Well, we talked about it on last week's show, so we won't go into it too much. But I think, you know, Angela Mosca is the legend around these parts. So what's going to happen is the fans are going to be in a tizzy. I think the team is going to be amped for this game to make Mosca proud. And usually we start these previews or we go through these previews talking about what the offense and the defense needs to do. But my key interest in this game is seeing if the this team can just continue doing what they're doing. It's not just that they're winning games, it's the manner in which they're winning these games. They beat Edmonton by 29 points in Edmonton. They had back-to-back, I think it was 30-point victories over BC and Winnipeg. Is this going to be another beatdown against Montreal, Mike?
I don't want to get too cocky because, you know, it's tough to keep winning like that, you know, especially in a parity league like this as it is right now. So I think this is going to be a close game. I think that the Ticats and the Owls have built up a rivalry over the last couple of years. You know, I think that the Alouettes and the Argos are the two top Ticats rivalries right now. So I think the Alouettes are going to be jacked up. You know, they just made that coaching change. They're going to want to prove, you know, they're going to want to play well for Jim Popp. So I think the Ticats are going to win, but I think it's not going to be a blowout like it's been the last couple weeks.
I do sort of wonder if maybe this is a bit of a trap game. You know, those happen in sports. And I know we as fans and, you know, people in the media tend to overdo it with things like that. But they got the Argos coming up after this, back-to-back weeks. They got a big break. Like, they play the Owls on Thursday and then don't play again until the following, like it's nearly a bye week for them. So they're going to get some time off to rest some of their injured players and some guys, you know, nicks and bruises and cuts and stuff are going to be able to sort of heal up. So I wonder if maybe they're kind of looking, I'm not even going to say it. I was going to say maybe they're looking past the Alouettes, but I don't think a Ken Austin coach team looks past anyone. And I think that loss in Montreal back in week 4 sticks in their craw and they're going to really want to show the Alouettes what these guys can actually do.
Yeah, I think that this, you know, every team wants to win every game, but I think this team wants to beat the crap out of every team every week. They don't take any weeks off. They just want to prove that they're the best team in the league. So they're not gonna lay off. They're gonna bring it. But I think the Alouettes are also gonna bring it too. I think that, you know, Cato hasn't been the Cato that we saw in the first couple games, so maybe he had a pretty good game against the Ticats in week 4 or whatever it was. So maybe he shines in this game. It'll be tough against the Ticats defense because it's so damn good. But yeah, I'm expecting a very entertaining, very tight game this week.
I too think this might be a little closer than a lot of people would expect, seeing as it's a 3-5 team coming in to play a 6-2 team in a place where the home team has never lost and they've been trouncing opponents the last few weeks. Like, they're not going to continue to do this, like you said. You know, there's going to be a bump in the road, and maybe that is this week, but I still think this team's going to get it done. Mm-hmm. But I do think that, you know, the Ticats are their cream of the crop right now in the CFL, and I really don't see a lot of ways in which the Owls can come in here and get that W, but you never know.
Want to go into our old predictions?
I would love to do that. Let's hear yours, pal. You've come close the last 2 weeks. Maybe this is the week you get over the hump.
I was impressed when Grigsby was in there, so I'm going to say that he gets the start, he gets over 100 yards rushing, and touchdown on the ground and touchdown in the air.
I've had quite a bit of luck with picking sort of like what the team will do in general, so mine is that this Ticats team will hold the Alouettes to under 10 points. Maybe not super bold, but hey, scoring points in the CFL usually comes in bunches, but this defense has been so good. They've been so good at home. I'm saying they hold the Owls to under double digits in this game.
That's bold. That'd be nice to see.
I want to keep the streak going. Let's move on now to the ending segment, everyone's sort of favorite segment where they get to be a part of the show, are questions from the Twitterverse. I've got a few before you get to yours. There was actually some questions on the comments section of Three Down Nation, which doesn't happen too often. Hopefully they will keep coming because I do enjoy them. And it gives me a chance to ask you a question because usually you're the guy asking all the questions around. Yeah. So we'll start with this one by a man who goes by the name of Brian. No last name. Maybe he's on witness protection or something.
He's like Madonna or Cher.
Maybe. Yeah. Who knows? Anyway, he wanted this question read last week but didn't get it in time. And it concerns the Brandon Banks return touchdown against BC. And here's what he had to say. During the Banks return TD, a flag was deliberately thrown by a ref. It was called no flag, but there has not been an explanation. I thought I saw an infraction, but was stoked it wasn't called. What did you see? So I know what I saw, but let's start with you, Mike. What did you see?
Well, if I remember correctly, it was a block on the kicker, and it was kind of, it may have looked from behind, but there might have been a little bit of a dive, which I think that you might say as well. So that's what I saw. I think that he saw the block in the back, and then maybe they talked about it and said he was, you know, diving a bit, and they took it back. So that's what I saw.
Yeah, same thing. My seats at Tim Hortons Field are pretty darn good. So I, like you, I like to sit a little high. I'm in the high section over there and can see everything. And I saw the flag get tossed, and I'm thinking, no, there's no way that's staying down. It's not so much that he took a dive, but he did flop. Like, and not flop because he got hit in the back, but like he was almost engaged with whoever the blocker was at the time and then just dropped in order to maybe try to trip Banks up or slow him down or something. And obviously it didn't work because Banks got to the end zone. And then there was a rather long conference between the officials, and they ended up picking up the flag because I think they saw what everyone else saw, that it was not a block in the back that knocked the punter down. It was, you know, he went down on his own accord, and rightfully so, they picked the flag, and Banks scored a touchdown, and all was good. All right, so you got some questions for me, I presume, so let's throw the first one out there, shall we?
It comes from the Twitterverse, as always, at USFL Tecmo, one of our loyal listeners. Is there a weakness on this Ticats team?
If we say no, then people are going to find a weakness and probably call us out on not being objective. Look, the team's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but to label sort of any unit or player a weakness, I think would be a little foolish, don't you?
Yeah. I guess you could say, because we talked about before, the running game, you know, it's not really there, but they're winning without it. But you got to have a bit of a running game going when it starts to get cold. So I think Grigsby's back. He's comfortable with the offense. I think they will get that going eventually. So, but if I had to say, it'd probably be the running game with a mixture of penalties, because I guess it's not really a weakness, but it's something that they could improve on.
No, that's discipline. You're right. That should have been my answer. Their discipline needs to be much improved. They take too many penalties, and they did so against Edmonton, as we talked about earlier in the show. And yeah, you're right. You know what? This team does have a weakness, and yeah, I would go with discipline. Again, the run game, yeah, it kind of sucks that the Ticats don't have one, but it seems like they use their running backs decently enough. Like, Hawley is a good pass catcher out of the backfield, so I'm not sure if the run game is going to be that much of an issue going forward. I mean, they haven't had a run game. Anytime CJ Gable's not in, they don't really have a run game, and they've managed to win a few games. So I would have to go with discipline, so that's my answer. Thank you for providing it, Mike.
Oh, no problem. That's what I'm here for. At A Sports Opinion, would you say the 2015 Ticats are better than the 2014 Stamps?
I will answer that question at the end of November. If the Ticats do not win the Grey Cup, then the answer is no. If the Ticats do win the Grey Cup, and based on what I've seen so far, and if this run sort of continues, then I will say yes. I think they are the more complete team right now than Calgary was last year. Like we talked about earlier, they have 8 defensive touchdowns in 8 games. Calgary probably hasn't had 8 defensive touchdowns in the last like 3 seasons. Like 8 defensive touchdowns in a single season is ludicrous. So yeah, the Ticats might be better than them right now, but if they don't hoist the Grey Cup in Winnipeg in November, then it all meant nothing. So let's come back to this one, at least for me, at the end of the year. What do you think?
Well, I think if you compare the two teams at this point, you know, Ticats team in late August against the Stampeders team in late August last year, I'd say that Ticats are a better team. But it's hard to say because you're right. Like it all depends if they win a championship. If they don't win a championship, then they're not better than the 2014 Stamps. So it's a hard question to answer. But as of right now, I'd say that they're a better team compared to the team the Stamps from 2014 in August were. So it's kind of a mishmash of answers, but that's the best I could do for that one. At 99AA Tigers coach, where have all the people gone that kept saying the Ticats can't win if they don't run the ball more?
I sort of fall into the camp. I think we both did earlier in the season, especially after a couple of close losses. You know, they lost that Calgary game because they didn't have any semblance of a running game. When a team wins, we sort of, you know, forget their flaws. We just had a question about weaknesses, and I couldn't come up with any. You came up with two, and I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. There are some weaknesses on this team. So it's more or less, you know, teams play better, and you sort of just, it masks the things that they don't do well.
Right now, they don't really need their running game so much because they're just, you know, passing the ball so well. It's still warm out. But like I said earlier, they're going to need to develop a running game. You know, when it's just snowing out, starts getting into October and November, they're going to need that running game in the playoffs. So they will need that part of the offense to start clicking to win late in the season and into the playoffs. Okay, so this question also comes from the same guy. So we have a couple questions that are very similar, so we'll just go with this question to answer some of the other questions that are pretty much the same. Why is Jeff Matthews not seeing any fourth quarter playing time in these lopsided games.
Well, I think the last game we talked about earlier, Norwood's touchdown, came with about 9 minutes to go, and it would have been a two-score game. You don't pull your starting quarterback in a two-score game in the CFL with 10 minutes to go, you know what I mean? So, yeah, maybe Matthews could have gotten a little playing time, and I'm sure there's people out there who don't want Caleros in there in these blowout situations, but Matthews did get playing time against the Lions. He didn't see any against Winnipeg, and Austin said after the game it was due to the offense not clicking, and, you know, we've gone over all the stuff before. So I think it's just Austin believes in his quarterback. He wants to see the team click. He doesn't ever want to see lulls. He doesn't like them. And I think that's more or less what this is about. I don't think it has anything to do with Jeff Matthews or anything to do with any other player on the roster. I think he just, you know, he wants this team to get that killer instinct where you step on their throat and then you step on it a little harder. And sometimes this team can let up a little when they get these big leads. And maybe that's why we're seeing the starting quarterback stay in there so long.
Yeah, I think Austin just wants Claris to get as much playing time as possible. And even in the blowout games, you know, he still wants him in there, getting more accustomed to the offense, even though he's pretty, you know, pretty good with it right now. He just wants things to be perfect. You know, it's never going to be perfect, but he wants just to keep getting better and better. And Claris doesn't want to come out either. He wants to be in there the whole game no matter what. So Claris got injured in one of these blowout games, then we'd be like, oh, God, like, why wasn't he in there? But I don't have a problem with it as long as he doesn't get hurt. And that's, you know, that's a tough thing to say because you never know when that's going to happen. So I think Austin and Claros just want perfection. And the more he plays, the better he's going to get.
And that's what's going to make these guys successful. That's what made Ken Austin successful as a player and as a coach. And that's what's going to make Zach Calero successful. These guys don't settle for average. Despite what the Marty Yorks of the world want to say, these guys want to be great. This is a team full of players who want to be great. And that comes from the coaching staff. It comes from the front office and starts with the starting quarterback. He wants to be great. They have one goal in mind, and it's to win the Grey Cup. And if Austin leaves Caleros in there and they hammer teams and Caleros keeps just getting that confidence up and keeps playing the way he's playing, I don't have a problem with it. So, okay, well, I have one more. This came from Twitter, and this is a pretty good question, I think, for us to end on. So this comes from AJ Nolte 44, and his question is, assuming the Ticats make the Grey Cup, which team from the West makes for the most interesting matchup?
I gotta say Calgary again. Maybe I'll change my tune if Riley comes back for the Eskimos or Franklin really gets the offense going for the Eskimos. But as of right now, I think that Calgary has a really good offense and a really good defense, and they would have the best matchup against Hamilton. Maybe have like the most entertaining game in the Grey Cup. So I gotta go with Calgary.
I'm with you on that one. I sit and watch a lot of games with my younger brother when the team is playing on the road, and after every game we were watching this Edmonton game and we were just like, you know, slack jawed at, oh my god, I can't believe they're doing this. And he brings up, he's like, the one hurdle this team still needs to overcome is Calgary. They haven't beat Calgary since I think it was the Moncton game in 2011. I'm almost 100% positive on that. If I'm wrong, I'm sure someone will correct me, but that I believe is the last time Hamilton beat Calgary. So it was Calgary that beat them in the Grey Cup last year. They need to get over the Calgary hump. They can do that in early October when the Stampeders make their very first visit to Tim Hortons Field. But yeah, I think, you know, from a storyline perspective and from an in-game perspective, I think that Calgary makes for the best matchup, the most interesting matchup. And I think it's the team, if you were to give, you know, sodium pentothal to all the players and coaches, I think Calgary is the team they want to face. They want to knock off the champs. They don't want them getting beat in a West semi or a West final. And, you know, people wondering, oh, could they beat the Stamps? I think they want the Stamps. And I think they want to, just like in 99, they wanted the Stamps again. And I think we're going to get them, and I think the outcome is going to be pretty similar. So, with that out of the way, we are done with the questions, and that means that we are done with the show. So, as always, don't forget that you can subscribe to our wonderful podcast on iTunes, or you can listen on 3downnation.com when this goes up every week. If you want to have your questions answered, you can hit Mike or myself up on Twitter. Mike, give him your Twitter handle as always, buddy.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am at JoshSmith_82. I nearly said 52. I don't know why. It's late. We're recording this one late for the first time ever, so maybe my brain's not working as well as it used to. Iverwind Stadium and 52. Maybe these late night recording sessions aren't so good for me. But anyway, if you want, you can also post a question in the comments section on 3downnation.com, like a few of our listeners did this week. That is that. So for Podski Wee Wee this week, I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.